All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the USCBI Task Force meeting. Let's officially start the meeting, beginning with roll call, starting with your co-chairs. Leslie Kelly Hall.
Here.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning.
Tom Budendijk. Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Jim Jarris. Ken Kawamoto. John Kilbourne.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Aaron Mary. Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber. Abby Sears.
Good morning.
Sasha Turmont. Andrew Trescott. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Dan Vereen. Freeman, sorry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
No worries.
All right, Stephen, thank you.
Thank you, Cassandra.
Denise Webb is on.
Thank you, Denise. And I don't think we called for Clem. Clem, are you on audio? He didn't show up yet. Well, wonderful. Thank you all for joining us this morning. If you want to go to the next slide, just want to welcome everybody, reminding you that past meeting notes are posted to the web as soon as possible. I'm not sure whether the team had a chance to post last week's, but I know we had our way with them. Today's meeting is focused on social determinants of health. I think everyone should be well aware by now that that the ONC determined that four new data elements reflecting social determinants of health were added to the new version 2 of USCDI. We specifically timed today's discussion to dig deeper into the SDOH data class so as to come after that announcement, so that the community has had a chance to kind of digest a bit the changes that have been made, and then to begin to reorient itself toward the future. That is to say, how might SDOH continue to play as USCDI expands into version 3 and beyond? So recall that we are working on our task 3 of developing recommendations to the ONC, or to the HIPAC and subsequently the ONC, regarding priorities for USCDI version 3, now in full light of what's been done with version 2. So we have with us today, in addition to our task force member, Mark Savage, who helps to lead the Gravity Project, we also have Evelyn Gallegos, who is here with us today to really give us a deep dive into Gravity, where they've been, where they are, where they're going, and specifically identifying what aspirations they have with regard to SDOH in USCDI as it continues to move forward. It's not clear to me at this point, the beginning of our meeting, whether our task force will need to make any recommendations about USCDI with regard to version 3, besides saying, you know, keep up the good work, ONC. My hope is through our discussion today that we will see whether, in fact, there are any specific issues that that would benefit from the input of the task force. Leslie, do you want to add to that?
No, I think that sounds great to me. Thank you.
Wonderful. We do have a number of members of the public and other guests from ONC with us today, and I welcome all of you. I want to remind the public that we do have a public chat feature within Adobe Connect, and you're welcome to jump in there if you have comments. We can sometimes address those kinds of written public comments during the course of the meeting, And 5 minutes before we end, we will open it up to public comment. And again, really encourage people who have an interest in speaking up in doing so at that time. With that, I think we are, also just FYI, I did invite Brett Marquard from HL7 and the U.S. Core team to join us. He had a couple things early, but maybe joining us within the next 20 minutes or so. And if he does, he may be able to provide some input as we discuss kind of the role of HL7 and the development of the implementation guides with regard to the advancement of the Gravity Project's data classes and use cases. So, sort of a lengthy introduction, but Mark, did you want to introduce Evelyn to the group?
Yes, happy to do so. Thanks, Stephen. So Evelyn Gallego is the Gravity Project's program manager, and given all that the Gravity Project has been doing these past 2 years to integrate social determinants of health data across the health and human services ecosystem, you might think that the Gravity Project is her sole full-time job. And indeed, it is a full-time job, but Evelyn does that and far more to improve healthcare nationwide. She's also the CEO of EMI Advisors, and in that capacity, for example, she's currently serving as the program manager and subject matter expert for ONC's STARS HIE Technical Assistance Program, which is helping HIEs in 5 states to strengthen health information exchange to support public health priorities such as COVID-19. She's also the program manager and subject matter expert for NIH's AHRQ's Multiple Chronic Care Electronic Care Plan Project, which is a FHIR-enabled care plan. She serves on the HL7 Policy Advisory Committee, recently served on the HIMSS Long-Term Post-Acute Care Committee. Obviously, a lot of depth, a lot of subject matter expertise, over 20 years of experience working with health, high-tech government health agencies, such as HHS, FDA, NIH, DOD. So Evelyn, on behalf of the USCDI Task Force, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us today on the Gravity Project and the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability. Over to you.
Thank you so much, Mark. Just want to make sure my audio is good.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, good morning, everyone. And thank you again, Mark, for such a lovely introduction. And thank you, USCDI Task Force members, for the invitation to speak to you today on the Gravity Project and to discuss our project's roadmap for your consideration in planning for USCDI version 3. As Mark noted, I'm the CEO of EMI Advisors, and I serve as the program manager for the Gravity Project. Next slide. So I'll start my discussion today with the Gravity Project's reflections on USCDI version 2, followed by a walkthrough of our current and upcoming roadmap. I will then speak about our considerations and recommendations for USCDI version 3. Next slide. Next slide. Great. So first, on behalf of the Gravity Project, I want to extend my sincere appreciation to all the USCDI Task Force members, not only for your diligence and the careful review and consideration of the SDOH data class submissions and letters of support, but also for your leadership and commitment to continuously advance nationwide interoperability for whole person care. Next, a big thank you to the National Coordinator, Mickey Tripathi, who listened openly to the recommendations and made the final approval. I would be amiss to not acknowledge Mickey's role prior to joining ONC in helping establish the Gravity Project as an HL7 FHIR accelerator. Next, a thank you to the ONC team, beginning with Al Taylor and Sam Meckler, who have been at the forefront of the vision for SDOH data interoperability and helped inform the Gravity approach since day one. And thank you, Health IT Advisory Committee, for listening to the public at large and moving forward with the SDOH recommendations to ONC. And finally, thank you to our very large multi-stakeholder public collaborative. I am here today because of the commitment and passion of our diverse stakeholder groups and volunteer subject matter experts, many who are new to standards and data interoperability, but understand the value of data exchange across the health and human services ecosystem. Next slide. So before jumping into what the Gravity Project is and our roadmap, I want to ground us on why this work is so important. I appreciate we are here today because we all fundamentally understand that addressing SDOH, or social determinants of health, is important for whole person care. The term SDOH has been a focal point for the health industry for several years, beginning with the shift from fee-for-service payment models to value-based care, and more so under the current COVID pandemic, where we have witnessed increasing health disparities as a result of unmet social needs. We have growing evidence that food insecurity correlates to higher levels of diabetes, hypertension, and heart failure. We know that housing instability factors into lower treatment adherence. And we know that transportation barriers result in missed appointments, delayed care, and lower medical compliance. COVID has only multiplied the medical, economic, and social crisis across the country and has forced us to take a hard look at social risk factors and health inequities. Health equity, as defined by the Department of Health and Human Services, is the attainment of the highest level of health for all people. Addressing SDOH is a primary approach for achieving health equity. Next slide. So the inclusion of the SDOH data elements and associated domains in USCDI version 2 truly propels nationwide interoperable health information exchange across the health and human services ecosystem. These data elements speak to the electronic language needed to integrate clinical and social care. The Gravity Project applauds how these SDOH data elements were incorporated into the existing structure of the USCDI data classes. By adding the four SDOH data elements into existing data classes for assessment, problems, procedures, and goals, it signals to the industry that SDOH-related activities should be part of the clinical workflow and not treated as distinct. In other words, a clinical provider should be able to use their certified technology to screen an individual for either a health or social related risk. The structure of the SDOH data elements also facilitate the ongoing addition of new value sets and domains as they are created through the Gravity Standards development process. And I will share in the upcoming slides, the Gravity Project has defined to date 14 SDOH domains. But this is not the exhaustive list of all SDOH domains available, so this structure will help incorporate new coded data elements as they become available. Next slide. So the USCDI version 2 also supports value-driven connections between the new data elements, in particular care team members and sexual orientation and gender identity, or SOGI. The inclusion of all care team members creates flexibility to recognize and document those family members and community-based providers that provide social care for an individual. The reality is that many families and friends provide social care right now and social supports and are not readily recognized for care coordination efforts. The addition of SOGI is also critical. SOGI is often considered an SDOH, especially in vulnerable and minority groups that experience ongoing health and social disparities. The ability to connect SOGI with SDOH data elements or activities can further improve and inform care for social risk factors, including intimate partner violence, where there is evidence of differences by sexual orientation and gender identity. Next slide. All right, our roadmap. Next slide. So I know this visual is always very hard to see, but it's our timeline, and I present it to you as a roadmap for consideration as you think through on what gets to include in USCDI or proposed for version 3. The Gravity Project was launched as a public collaborative in May of 2019. As a project, we were encouraged to facilitate two work streams you see here at the same time, one focused on data elements or terminology, and the second one focused on the development of fire specifications to support the terminology work. We completed our first domain of food insecurity in late 2019 and launched our fire development work in early 2020. At the same time, we shifted our focus to developing data concepts for multiple SDOH domains at the time, instead of working on just one domain at a time. You might see a horizontal green line to indicate where we are in the timeline. In 2020, we completed housing instability and homelessness, and in early January of this year, we completed the domains of inadequate housing, transportation insecurity, financial insecurity, and demographic status specific to unemployment, education, and veteran status. Over the past few weeks, we completed data elements for assessment and diagnosis within the domains of material hardship, stress, intimate partner violence, elder abuse, and social isolation. In the fall, we will complete defining data elements for goals and interventions across these domains. I just want to acknowledge we have, because we work across the four activities of assessment, diagnosis, goals, and interventions, we started with screening or assessment and diagnosis and then move on to goals and interventions. We've proposed new domains of food deserts and neighborhood safety for end of this year. On the technical workstream lane, we validated the HL7 Fire Implementation Guide as a standard for trial use, or STU, in January of this year, and just completed ballot reconciliation and made our formal submission for publishing this Fire ID through the HL7 process. We've also tested the Fire Implementation Guide in all the recent HL7 Connectathons, and last week, most recently, in the CMS Connectathon. We will continue to update and refine the Fire IG based on the upcoming pilots. So we have a pilot work stream we plan to launch this fall and ongoing Connectathon testing. Next slide. So our current SDOH Fire Implementation Guide incorporates 6 components or activities as listed here on the left-hand side and illustrated with the right visual as a cycle. The first activity is screening or assessing for social risk and defining the associated health concern or diagnoses. The screening question answer pairs and scores are coded in LOINC and the health concern and associated diagnoses in a SNOMED CT and ICD-10. Value set. Once the social risk is identified, then the social need and associated goal to address that need, or we refer to as activity 2 here, is established using LOINC and SNOMED CT codes. Next, we plan and track the interventions or actions, which can include a referral to a community-based organization to meet those goals identified in the previous step. These interventions are coded in SNOMED CT. The outcomes of these interventions, activity 4 here, are documented using LOINC codes. The fifth activity is the aggregation of this coded data for use and reporting to include for population health, quality reporting, and risk adjustment. And last is the ability to capture an individual or patient's consent to share this data across all these activities. And again, these are all documented within the existing Fire ID. Next slide. Thank you. Next slide. So what do we propose for next year and that can be considered for USCDI version 3? So let's start with acknowledging what is included now in USCDI version 2. This is the black text you see across these four columns presented here. As I mentioned earlier, it began in May of 2019. We've had lessons learned on how to tackle new SDOH domains and apply new terminology across those four activities or data elements of assessments, problems, goals, and interventions. So let me begin with the domains column. The domains in black have been completed or are close to completion based on the roadmap I just walked through. The new domains we propose are in red here. I already mentioned food deserts and neighborhood safety are scheduled for end of this year. For next year, before June 2022, we propose to have completed the domains of health literacy and minority and relationship stress. We will also begin work on racism, discrimination, and bias. However, we do not anticipate having this very large and sensitive domain completed by mid-next year. We have learned through our collaborative work with the public and the subject matter experts that when we begin to work on an overarching domain or parent domain, and as we gather evidence and discuss with all our stakeholders, these domains begin to split into related or child concepts. We have seen this already with the housing domain that was split into three, housing instability, homelessness, and inadequate housing, and each one tackled separately. The same happened with financial strain, which then became financial insecurity and material hardship. Next, we move on to the second column. We already talked about the four existing data elements. We would like to incorporate what I walked through in the FHIRE IG outcomes. So we want to have outcomes added, consent, data aggregation, and then incorporating existing level two domains that have been submitted by other stakeholders around billing and health insurance. Really important to consider that even as we move through in the clinical system, that a lot of these services need to be approved or authorized by the payer group. So these data elements will be very important. Next, I'll walk through our proposed use cases and corresponding IGs that are in our current pipeline. Please note that all this still needs to be approved and funded through our existing Gravity governance structure. However, we are confident that most, if not all of these, will be initiated through the Gravity standards development work. So our current FHIRE IG incorporates transactions that begin within the healthcare system. So for that reason, we have purposely labeled it the SDOH Clinical Care Implementation Guide. We have heard loud and clear from our community, in particular community-based organizations and social service technology providers, that we need to develop use cases that support specific CBO to CBO data exchange or CBO to state agency data exchange. We are aware of current interoperability activities being initiated by the Administration for Children and Families and the Office of Minority Health that speak to these specific transactions or use cases. The second important use case and IG will be around SDOH quality measures. The Gravity Project team works closely with NCQA and NQF, and we've had initial discussions on how to develop digital quality measures based on the work we are completing through Gravity. Our current FHIRE IG is also focused on individual patient-level data exchange. We still need to do more work around population-level data, which is a strong focus of the research community. The CDC has also publicly stated their interest in creating a public health focused use case through the Gravity process. We the CDC on launching that hopefully end of this year. Social service provider directory standards are not in our current work, critical for the interoperability of SDOH data. We continue to have ongoing discussions with our Gravity Technical Advisory Committee members on how to ensure the alignment between ongoing national provider directory work right now facilitated through the DaVinci project and the current infrastructure that exists out there for social or resource-based directories. And finally, there is the opportunity to work on specific research or patient-centered outcomes research or PCOR use cases in IG. We've had initial, again, discussions with the National Academy of Medicine that has been working on this, and we'll continue to speak to them on it. Next slide. All right, on to our recommendations. Next slide. So as you all, USCDI Task Force, consider the next phase of data costs for version 3, I want to pause and reflect on the opportunities and challenges with version 2 and how they can help inform what ends up being proposed for version 3. So let's start with opportunities. As shared earlier, the SDOH data class in version 2 informs health industry what SDOH data elements should be collected and what standards should be used to represent and exchange this data electronically. We also have a means now to better facilitate SDOH data integration at a national level to meet the growing COVID-19 response needs. The addition of the SDOH data class also provides a glide path for moving from creating standards for technical capacity, what we always refer to as the floor, to real-world implementation. So this is not; these are not standards to just sit published and ready for use. They're now, this helps create that glide path. And then the addition also creates a framework for providers and payers to scale the FHIR APIs they are already creating to meet CMS interoperability rule requirements into social care and health equity-focused initiatives. So again, significant opportunities and a big bravo for having them incorporated in version 2. Next slide. But even with all these opportunities, we have some challenges and slight barriers to overcome. These are not, I would say, not significant, but they are noteworthy. So the first is this learning curve that exists for social care integration and use, especially with clinical settings that don't normally collect or act upon this data or are paid to act on this data. This needs to be addressed with ongoing education and workforce training and accreditation beyond just incorporating the data collection and payment models to create the right incentives. The CMS rules just came into effect. We still have limited use of CERT and FHIR-based solutions across the country. And there still needs the ability to scale to settings that are not regulated by CMS. So far, we have worked on 14 domains, but only one, food insecurity, has published codes across the three leading terminologies of LOIN, SNOMED, and ICD-10. We still have to work alongside the coding stewards to develop the requested codes and publish them based on their existing publication schedules. Case in point is ICD-10. The Gravity Project submitted the multi-domain submission in December of last year, so it could be included in the review cycle for March of this year. The codes were approved for publication in October of 2022. Again, they were reviewed in March 2021 and approved for October 2022, except for those the ICD-10 committee then deemed essential for the COVID-19 response that were then bumped up to the October 2021 release. So, again, a very lengthy process. The Gravity FHIR-D is at the point of being formally published, or it is formally published by HL7, and it has not been tested in the field or implemented by entities to date. Of course, this is soon that will change, but at this point in time, it is still recently published. We also have the proliferation of community referral platforms like AmpBertha, Unite Us, NowPow. These are new technologies, important technologies, that have emerged to address or to meet the social referral requirements. But they have yet to be fully, all of them, fully implemented into the health ecosystem, and they are not regulated as search. And last, as more and more of this data becomes available, we need to ensure it is used for good and does not create further health and social disparities in the market. To this end, we have developed the Gravity Data Principles with our community, but these still, again, these principles still need to be consistently reviewed and incorporated as we work towards implementation of the standards. Next slide. So this brings me to the recommendations for version 3. Again, these are thoughts the Gravity PMO identified for your consideration. So they're just for your consideration. So one consideration is to look at the data elements both at the individual level and in combination. Having more granularity on who the care team members are ensures all individuals who support the patient or the person, including the person themselves, are included in their overall care. It is also good to link functional and cognitive status data elements with SDOH data elements to help identify and help reduce health disparities in vulnerable populations such as the frail, the elderly, and the disabled. It's also important to consider moving beyond bi-directional data exchange to multi-directional exchange. APIs are a great example as you expose data and it becomes available through a plethora of platforms at any given time. In this regard, consider the role of patients and their non-clinical providers, like family members and community-based organizations, that may be the source of SDOH data. So again, it originates from them and the systems they use. We see this already with data collected and owned by the individual using their smartphone, where we all collect our wellness data and track our activities. And community-based organizations that often are the initial entity administering the social risk assessment. Next slide. So in the same vein of keeping data elements connected, and from my own personal viewpoint of working on standardized care plans now for a decade, consider how these elements can support person-centered planning, as required under the Medicaid program and the Administration for Community Living No Wrong Door program, as well as how it could be incorporated in advanced care planning. That is, there's ongoing standards development work through the PASIO project. Again, very critical for Medicare and Medicare Advantage programs. You may also want to consider how these elements advance other use cases for upstream and downstream use, such as those specific for COVID-19 and pandemic responses, population health, public health, digital quality measurement, and risk adjustment. Next slide. I think now that concludes my presentation. I think we're open for questions. Okay. I'll pause now.
Incredible, Evelyn. Thank you so much for that whirlwind tour of Gravity and the phenomenal work that you and the team have been doing. Really appreciate that. So I'll just, as people are getting their act together, I think Dr. McDonald joined us early on. We've got a couple of hands up. But I think just in terms of informing this discussion more generally, a key question, and I threw it out at the beginning, is what, if anything, should our task force consider now as we work through our task 3 and develop recommendations to HITECH and ONC about USCDI version 3? Is there something in particular that you would want to highlight that our task force could help to support, suggest, encourage with regard to planning ahead for version 3? So just as you're addressing the questions that come up, just think about various, because we have a very specific deliverable. We write a report. It has, A, B, C recommendations. What recommendation, if any, do you think would be helpful from this group? So I'll just put that as a lingering question and then invite Clem McDonald to ask the first question. Clem, we can't hear you. You might be muted.
No, I'm sorry. I wasn't talking yet. I thought you had.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I wanted to ask. So, you know, I was involved a little with the North Carolina group, and they were using Prepare, which is, you know, 10 or 12, maybe 15 questions. And they were all targeted to actions that you could send off to a social service or whatever to get do something good. But the new one, it's harder for me to see the package. Is there still a survey instrument in the center of it? Something like Prepare? Where is that named? Where does one find that or part of it? Because smeared across all the other resources, it makes it hard to get your eyes around, you know? You've got stuff in, you know, and many, many different resources, but there's still a questionnaire, right?
Correct, yes. And we build off your questionnaire, or the NLM questionnaire that's designed under using the structured data capture resource. Okay. I mean, FHIR ID. So it's all incorporated. But I do want to acknowledge that the FHIR ID is agnostic to screening tools, meaning that it works across any structured survey. So Prepare being one of them, but acknowledging that we incorporate more than one. It can facilitate using different types of surveys.
Okay, but if you don't have... If it's 100 different surveys, then how do you ever unify data and unify reaction to the data?
The idea is more if you have the question and prepare, as long as the data elements are coded and the ID specifies how you incorporate that survey into the clinical workflow, and again, building off what you've, the NLM screening tool.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
This is Leslie. I have a question, and also I see Ricky has a comment and Grace has a question. So, Evelyn, we had a lot of patient education that was done post Meaningful Use 1 and 2 using the InfoButton standard. And in the InfoButton standard, that gives as much demographic information as we had about the patient at the time, height, weight, chief complaint, principal diagnosis. We had also in their language of the provider and language of the patient. And this information is used huge, widely, National Library of Medicine, every content vendor. And it seems that SDOH will also potentially inform the selection of correct patient education. So how is HL7 reconciling the info button with the SDOH?
That's a great question. We have not had those discussions, so I can take note and bring that up on how we can connect this. I think there's still, you know, again, we've just completed our published the FHIR ID, and we are working with the other FHIR accelerators, but definitely this is an area of opportunity, and we'll put that on our radar. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then
Grace,
Ricky had a comment too.
But actually, Grace had her hand up first, I think.
Thanks.
So let's go there.
Thank you, Evelyn, for a really invigorating presentation. From the patient and care partner perspective, I'm beyond excited by a lot of the different directions that you presented about. I had a comment about the implementation guide in action, specifically on the concept of consent. A lot of these concepts and data elements in the real world and at point of care from the patient and care partner perspective can be very difficult, embarrassing, stigmatizing, challenging to talk about, and there has to be a safe space and trust first. And I feel that consent should be pursued first rather than the slide. It was depicted as the last step 6. I'm wondering your thoughts from your perspective on tackling that consent piece up front. And then when you think about these difficult concepts and social components of care, where does personalized privacy and data segmentation fall with sharing this information? And I'm thrilled to see that you have data principles for equitable use, but is there a way that we can give something more concrete with respect to protecting privacy and sharing some of these pieces of information.
Thanks, Sarah. So yes, I apologize if it was not clear. Consent is cross-cutting, so it's captured across all the activities, beginning with assessment and screening. So that's why it's number six activity, but it's cross-cutting. So I do want to acknowledge consent is captured from the start. There, I am not a consent expert, but I know there's ongoing discussion. It is very important to the community, and to your point around having protecting the individual and making sure data that is sensitive to them is not shared, and they have a stake on what gets shared and how their data is kept secure as well from privacy and security perspective. So that is definitely an activity. In regards to the data principle, so I think there does need to be, again, the Gravity is a data standards development project. We're in the process of thinking through. When I didn't present here, our pipeline is also education, more education outreach and dissemination. And we do need to create more education around how can, you know, I do know, for example, PREPARE, NACS, the National Association of Community Health Centers, has an excellent toolkit for PREPARE on how to administer the tool, how to be sensitive to an individual situation, and ask the questions in a way that makes the individual not only feel that their data is protected and private, but comfortable answering. So we still need to do a lot more of that. That is something that we've heard loud and clear again from our community, that as we publish, develop the standards, we need to create more materials that could help clarify the work that we're doing and provide guidance. And I think Ricky had the same question I see here. If we're providing any guidance or recommendations to health systems, again, we're not right now. Again, we just start, you know, for us is getting all these domains and getting the IG out, and we need to do create more guidance around these activities.
I think that's a really good point, Evelyn, insofar as I think one of the big challenges, you know, as a provider myself, is really looking at where and how and by whom these data are going to be collected. So clearly the structure and standards that Gravity is developing, you know, need to move forward, as you say, into implementations, into pilot projects, so that we can see them in the real world. Do we have Hans and or Sasha? I don't see either of them on. They tend to be our vendor representatives. But I guess I'll just ask you then, what have you seen in terms of EHR and other health IT vendor interest in this work and engagement, and how you know, there are all these moving pieces, right? There's doing all the definitions. There's getting them approved by all the standards bodies. And then there's getting them into health IT systems so that they can be collected and subsequently shared. What do you see as the challenges and opportunities for the EHR and other health IT vendors in helping to move this forward?
That's a great question. Thank you, Steve. So just acknowledging, shout out to the EHR vendors. They're heads down meeting CMS requirements right now. So they are engaged. So I do, you know, in particular on the terminology side, we have, and as well on the HL7 side, so they've informed, they voted on the Fire IG, informed updates to it. I just, you know, again, they're busy with implementation right now, meeting the requirements of the CMS rules and ONC rules. So for them, it's more of like they're tackling that, and then this is something that, you know, they are aware of and are interested in, but I know that they're going to focus on what's immediately in front of them before they tackle the next activity. But having it in USCDI is a good signal for them that it's coming.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't see any other hands up. Grace, you made a comment in the public chat. Do you want to put voice to that?
Thank you, Stephen. I'm just trying to think of the big picture on how our task force can align and support the work that the Gravity Project is doing, and is there a role for recommendations regarding USCDI V3 to advocate for more data segmentation, personalized privacy controls as we think about equity by design?
This is just Leslie, and I'm curious about what your thoughts are on patient-generated health data in the future to help complete some of these questions that are not typically gathered at the front desk or even in the exam room. And generally quite intimate and private. How do you see patient-generated health data fitting into this?
I think it's at the forefront. It's critical. So part of it is a lot, that's why, you know, one of the points was really having the patient, person, individual will be the source of the data, right? They're the ones who will be prompted to, like we are right now, we're prompted to complete questionnaires before we go into a provider or to see a provider, and we do that on our smartphone on a web-based platform. So I think we need to encourage and facilitate more of that. I think there's still a learning curve even on the clinical side, but I think definitely this is an area that could be that point where individuals feel more comfortable completing and owning that data themselves and then determining whether or not they share it.
Thank you very much.
Evelyn, I think Grace raised a question earlier, and I'm not sure we explored it fully. This notion that perhaps consent should be at the front end of this process. I appreciate that it's been added and it's included as a future direction. But I think that notion that, you know, if we want to be able to collect this data, if we want people to feel comfortable sharing it, whether it's through their smartphone or in response to a question and answer with a human being or a bot, that there needs to be that sense of, you know, I agree to share this. I agree with regard to who might be receiving this data. You know, and of course that complexity of data segmentation, and you know, I'm willing for this to be used by my provider, my social service provider, but perhaps not by others. How do you really see that consent playing out over time as this moves forward? And do you see it as, you know, moving to the front end of the process, you know, as part of initial data collection, or is it really more focused on the sharing of the data between entities?
That's a great question, Steve. So we have it as number two data element proposed, right? So that's on our, because we already have it incorporated in our FHIR-IG. So I think as you think of version three, we have outcomes first as the new data elements, and then consent second. So I think this is should be front and center. And I think it's twofold. It begins with the individual, the patient, right? So this data will not be, you know, when we talk about, and again, acknowledging the lexicon that Dr. Laura Gottlieb from Styron at the Milibank lexicon, where she defines social risk and social needs. And I think it's really important that the industry, you know, if they haven't, and we can send a link to that lexicon, really understand the nuances between social risk and social needs, and the role the individual plays, right? So you can screen someone and identify a social risk, but it doesn't become, you take no action on it until the individual acknowledges it is a social need, that they want to partner with their provider in supporting and therefore establish goals around that. So I think thinking of that model throughout this as we think of overall social risk factors and social determinants of health, it is really important, and that's where the consent comes in too, is that does the individual consent to having the social risk being identified from the start? So even if they don't consent to having the health system take an action or they don't think it's a social need, at least there's a way that they consent to have that social risk be documented.
Evelyn, this is Leslie again, following up on that. So every social determinant could be a finding or an observation, or it's mm-hmm. in itself doesn't determine the risk, right? It's something that describes a situation. Some have risk and some do not have risk. How are you accommodating that? So my example is I was building a house and technically I was homeless because I was living in a family member's home. But I wasn't ever at risk. So how are you separating a risk value from the actual descriptor?
So many of the screening tools do incorporate that, right? So it's asking questions and depending on the answer and looking at them holistically and having an overall score, then you determine whether there's a risk or not. So actually administering of this, so again, I'm not an expert on social risk administration, but these are, you know, what I've learned through the Gravity Project, that you can screen someone and they may, as your case, they may be homeless for an instant of time, but they have no risk, right? Again, depending on the score and the answers to the question. So I think it's just like you would on the healthcare screeners as well, is that you ask the questions to determine whether there is a problem that needs to be solved or addressed. Does that make sense?
Thank you. Yeah, that does. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So I've asked the Adobe team, the Excel team, to help us bring up the public USCDI website, because Al Taylor, in response to some feedback, has made a point of trying to display this data in a way that's most helpful. So I think, again, as we heard last week, when you go there to the USCDI version 2 tab, you can see the four data elements that were included in version 2, the SDOH assessments, goals, problems and health concerns, and interventions. And, you know, we've talked about how they were tucked into existing data classes as opposed to being lumped together in their own data class. And I think that may be something that we want to provide input on with regard to version 3. When you go to the level 2 tab, what you again see is those four elements as they were initially submitted, plus the additional element of the outcomes, I'm sorry. So outcomes, SDOH outcomes, as was mentioned, is listed as level 2 and has not yet been included in the version 2. So I think that of all of the data elements, and of course our task force is focused on data elements, thanks Al, I think we're ready to share that now. Of all the data elements, the one that is sort of most on deck, if you will, excuse the pun, for inclusion in version 3 would be those SDOH outcomes. And I guess I wanted to maybe hear from Al as well as from you, Evelyn, you know, what it would take to get outcomes over the line, to get SDOH outcomes included in version 3. And then again, when we look further on down at the comment level, there are a whole host of SDOH data elements that have been included in comment. And you mentioned, Evelyn, the importance of consent. So that one is there, but it is down at the comment level. So still quite some ways down the schema. And so I guess I would really be interested in what in particular will it take to get those two, the outcomes and the comments, over the line into version 3. Is that something that is broadly advocated? Is that something that would warrant or benefit from the input of our task force? So I know, Al, maybe you can talk about kind of where things are and how they're being displayed, and then we can talk about kind of what is the gap. If those two are Evelyn's primary focus to move forward, perhaps in version 3, how would the task force support that?
Sure. The reason, let me start with outcomes, because that was maybe, let me start with outcomes. We felt like outcomes were represented in the same way that problems and assessments were represented, particularly using the same coding, and an outcome is really more of a delta rather than an actual with a single point in time measurement. So a repeat assessment that shows change in risk or a change in risk score is one way to represent an outcome. So, you know, risk A minus risk B is an outcome. And also a change in the problem or the change in the severity of a problem or health concern is also another way to represent an outcome. And that, you know, that was the primary reason why we did not advance outcomes as a unique data element. It can be represented by pairing other data elements over time. On the comment, most of the data, a lot of the way that the domains and most of the comment level data elements that were submitted are unique domains of SDOH. The reason that those were not advanced and the other, I guess, structure was advanced into version 2 is that the domains themselves are not unique data elements. The domains are areas of study, areas of concern, and within each of those areas of concern, you have the same structure that we adopted for USCDI V2. Mm-hmm. So within child care and security, there are concepts of assessment, goals, interventions, and problems, not necessarily in that order, but there. So, and then the same thing applies for all of these other domains, with the exception of consent, which is more of the broader concept. And so those, because those didn't represent a unique data element, they represented focus areas, sort of like a clinical, it's sort of like a clinical specialty. If you think about it like a clinical specialty, the way that we attack a clinical problem is the same as the way that we would attack an SDOH concern, by breaking it down into the assessment and the treatment and the outcomes and the, you know, and the problem list. And so it, regardless of what domain, it has the same structure. And that's why we adopted that version of the SDOH submissions and not the domain-specific ones.
And Al, can you comment specifically about the consent data element, which Evelyn highlighted is particularly important to the scheme
sure.
of the envision?
Yeah, I think that the idea of developing interoperable consent data is obviously a really important one across every domain of healthcare, really. I think that the assessment was that it wasn't as mature as the other domains that are well defined and well specified, if that changes over time, I think that there would be a lot of interest in considering a consent data element, or whether it's a single data element or if it's something greater than that, because there's a lot of moving parts to a consent, the concept of a consent. That's something that we would certainly consider if there's a consensus implementation of consent that could apply to more areas than only SDOH care. That would definitely be something that we would be interested in looking at.
Evelyn, do you want to comment on any of what Al just said?
No, I hear what Al is saying, and agree. I think there does need to be a maturity to this, and as I mentioned, it's one of the existing small barriers to this work is that we don't have enough evidence from a standardized, structured way of capturing this data. So we need to do more. And again, outcomes have been near and dear to my heart from a care planning perspective. So when we think of the care plan structure, even as a fire resource or as a CCDA document template, it does incorporate all those components and includes outcomes distinct from the assessment. So it's really just, again, how can we do that, continue doing that in a structured and standardized way, mature the standards, mature the ability to collect this data in this format, and then have them included in future versions.
So we've got a hand up from Dan Breeman.
Yeah, it strikes me to think about a recommendation around what to do with the domain-specific references that still are on the USCDI page as submissions. And it seems like there's great support for the idea of including the references in the more general structures, like the approach that was advanced is a good one. But it is also slightly confusing to still see all of the individual domain areas kind of as a separate thing. So we might want to think about what to recommend in that way.
You know, I think you make a really good point, Dan. I think it's important how we're displaying things. And it's important, you know, what is posted on the website as we, you know, and ONC and the community at large looks forward to how this needs to be advanced. One is left with the feeling when you look at this long list that there's all this stuff that is needed that is not included. And, you know, the way Al put it, you know, there's all this stuff that could be supported today using the data elements that have already been added. I think perhaps, you know, consent being the exception, but for the most of these others, I think what you're saying is that we've already in version 2 given you the tools to support these various domains. So I think that
exactly.
as we and others, you know, look at continuing to support SDOH through USCDI, you know, we want to kind of feel like what really is left to be done, and that should be displayed on the website and what is completed. So I think, Evelyn, you and I spoke about this the other day. You know, not only has Gravity made submissions of some of these data elements, but some of these also came from a couple of folks at NACHC, and one of them actually came from Epic, the HR vendor. And I think that there is not only an opportunity, but really a desire that I would see to go through and kind of clean up this list. You know, if in fact mm-hmm. child care insecurity and clothing insecurity and some of these others are ready to be supported using the tools that have been added already to USCDI, maybe they should be withdrawn. You know, if they're, you know, are some of these that are, you know, so close that they could be collapsed into a single one, you know, maybe that should be done. You know, if different submitters came to the same problem with a slightly different perspective. So I guess I would ask you, you know, since Gravity is, or Mark also, Gravity is the submitter of the majority of these, do you buy what Al is saying? You know, that you know, we've given you the tools, you know, you can run with them without adding these individually to future versions, or do you have a different perspective?
Adding the domain. So I think we had talked about reaching out to these entities as well to make sure we're describing or labeling these domains in the same way. And I think also is acknowledging, you know, how we've defined them within the Gravity Project is more around the risk that you know, you are food insecure, right? But when we talk about social determinants of health, they are neither positive or negative, right? They are the conditions in which we live, work, play. So, you know, they're, we need to think through of, you know, if you want to display them, you know, do you want to track food security from a, you know, transportation access, like things that are not negative or risk defined as risk. So I think we need to do more work there. But like, as I mentioned, I think the structure aligns, and having the level two or the activities data elements described in that way and just incorporating new data of what we call the domains and as we're defining them makes the most sense to us.
Stephen, I wanted to add something to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
When USCDI V2 came out, there were a lot of things that didn't get added to V2 that I think a lot of folks wanted or thought ought to be added to V2, and we acknowledge that. We also want to be able to communicate that there are other things that not only the ONC and others can do to support the implementation of V2, but also to support other things that might not have made it into V2. Things like, so particularly around defining value sets, because value sets, there's discrete value sets that that are being developed right now that go a long way towards helping implementing some of these concepts. The USCDI is not set up to support, as well set up to support discrete value sets. We do have some value sets that are defined by regulation and other ways of getting those implemented. We also have available, and we can actually use that as a reference, the Interoperability Standards Advisory, which is able to put together these more functional packages rather than discrete data elements that don't necessarily have a function assigned to them. But we can create, like we have started to do this work and still have some work to do, is building out an SDOH page or a function within the Interoperability Standards Advisory where we can support multiple value sets, multiple domains, and multiple activities all in the same place to be sort of a one-stop shop about how to implement these things that are added to V2.
Did we lose Evelyn?
Nope, I'm here.
Okay.
Sorry, I was going to say whatever. Nope, I'm here. Like whatever Al says.
That's where you often say that.
Yeah.
Stephen, Abby had some comments in the chat and also her hand up.
This is Abby. I just wanted to speak to, there's a lot of us in the field that are already collecting very comprehensive data through the screening tools. We happen to build a very broad tool that encompassed, I think, three of the major ones that are out there, PREPARE, the National Academy of Medicine, and maybe CMS's, I think. And we have almost 1 million screens and already. And so our patient population, many of the community health centers have to capture very sensitive data already to be part of their certification process for the funding that they get and the enhanced Medicaid payments that they get. So the screening tools are an and, I guess is what I would say, not necessarily outside of what they're used to asking. I think it's really intriguing and very interesting to think about patient-entered data, and we've been talking a lot about this. Just we've had some very interesting learnings around the pandemic and some of our most at-risk patient populations and their computer literacy and or educational literacy and or interest. So our over, I think, 60 population will only use audio. There's almost no video visits that they will even entertain using. So the question about patient-entered data, I think we're going to have a hard time. I think the point that caregivers or care partners would help, I think, is really good. I think that that some of the most at-risk patients that have some of the biggest social factors and limitations and challenges may or may not have the same level of support as a commercial population might have. So I just think those are things to remember. And I guess the one point I really want to make that is really important, we have data out there, and the providers and the people collecting the data are losing their interest in collecting the data because they don't know what to do with the data once they collect it at the primary care setting. So if they're collecting it, it needs to go somewhere. If you're a clinician or a provider, you want to know something important is happening with the work that you're actually doing, and they don't know what to do about the transportation issue. They don't know what to do about the fact that they're in a food desert. They don't know what to do about their education level. And they're not necessarily part of the system that maybe is creating that care coordination. I think that primary care is doing more and more care coordination, but sometimes the Medicaid payers are the ones that are doing that, but they can't get the data because we can't move the data. There's no seamless, streamlined way to move the data. So I guess I just, you know, as I'm listening to the conversation about when and how and we advance what's going on in version 3 and we think about how to get it in there, and it's just I don't want to lose the momentum in the field, because we have momentum if people really care about the equity issue. But if they can't, I've actually had providers stop collecting it and organizations stop collecting it because they can't do anything with it. And I just want to make sure that that's on everybody's radar, and that we're conscious of the fact that in the field, people want to actually do this, and they need to know something's happening with the data they're collecting.
Evelyn, to that end, is there anything in the Gravity Project or beyond that talks about best practice and also interventions that can take place outside of the care setting?
So I just want to acknowledge Abby's point is, Abby, you're on point, and we are very aware of that. And something I struggle too, as the Gravity Program Manager, is acknowledging what the scope of the Gravity Project is. We are developing data standards for exchange and use, right? We want this, but we are a standards initiative. We are not poised to develop guidance right now, and we're not, unless that is something that our governance structure asks us to do. But it is definitely needed. I recognize, so I am aware there's lots of legislation, pending legislation out there for use, right? What guidance needs to be developed on the Medicaid and Medicare side to inform the use of this data. So I think that's something that is important and understood across the industry. I do applaud, again, ONC for having, they have an open, they have a cooperative agreement out for public health related education, you know, for workforce training. So I think there's lots of opportunity right now, and we do definitely need to keep acknowledging that there needs more work on exactly, we can develop the standards and have the systems be able to capture this data, but we need to move beyond to implementation and use.
With that, and in the absence of hands up, I'd like to circle back to Mark, if possible. You know, you've been very close to this work. Can you give us some high-level summary of this discussion and what you see as potentially valuable for the task force as we look at crafting recommendations around B3?
Thanks, Stephen. This has been a really rich conversation, much appreciated. To your point about high-level, what might be on the task force's workload going forward, I think you've heard from Evelyn two things, that the Gravity Project will come back with a submission for V3 for outcomes and consent, mindful of the suggestions and input that we've heard today and before today. but that will be a consideration, I think, in the future. We also heard that in the task force's consideration to think not about just about the individual data elements, but how they work together. So there were some, Evelyn raised some examples that illustrate how that can work. So care team members, for example, when you think about how care team members work as a data element works with SDOH data elements, you get an even bigger bang for the buck. So that, and that's not the only example. I mean, there are ways in which this may happen and where future submissions for V3 might work with SDOH data elements to provide even more help to the ecosystem. So I think that was another overarching suggestion for the task force's consideration. And then lastly, I think the recommendations for consideration around V3 suggest some ways to think about the priorities issue that we as a task force have been discussing, and may help inform that as well. For example, are there data elements that may help with incorporating patient-generated health data? I'm not sure what the answer might be, but there's a broader set of priorities in addition to maturity that we've been thinking about, and I think the Gravity Project's recommendations highlight some of the ways to think about that. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Mark. There's been a lot of discussion in the public chat by task force members, primarily Grace, Jim, Abby. Was there anything that you guys wanted to put voice to here?
Stephen, it's Grace. I just wanted to comment. I really appreciated Abby's point. It's a powerful point, and I can see the mirror of that from the patient perspective, that many patients may be disheartened or reluctant to share some of these details because they don't see actionable change in the short term, and they feel desperate, and they may feel that their story is so complex and their life is so complicated that sharing this info, no one can really help or has the time to help. And I see that as an opportunity in the consent process and how we refresh maybe and rethink how we collect this information. We can't solve it all, but incrementally, if we can make one thing actionable, to Abby's point, where the provider and caregiver that's collecting this information and the patient and the care partner that are sharing these details can see some sort of actionable change, I think that we've made some great progress.
That makes sense. All right. Other thoughts from the task force?
This has just been really, really helpful.
So, Steve, I got my hand up, but I didn't want to talk out of turn.
You know, for some reason, I'm not seeing all the hands. I apologize.
Neither am I.
Well, what if it's my turn? I just had to comment on a couple of things.
At
an inner city hospital in Indianapolis, we developed a survey for collecting some course symptom data and what was bothering patients. And it couldn't be done without nursing actually helping the patient through it. And these were paper documents, but it's not much different. These were old, often undereducated people, and it was not workable. So I think the idea of patient-entered data may be ambitious. The second thing is, when I looked at the PREPARE project and how it was going to be used in North Carolina, it seemed like a lot of the questions had actions that could follow. Like the transport, they could refer them to, some taxi company that could be paid. If it was food, they could refer them to a number of places. So am I wrong about that? Are there some of the questions that aren't actionable? And if there are, those I think I would downplay until they were.
You know, I think you're raising a really important point, Clem. And I think a number of people have made this point, that collecting this, it's clear that social determinants impact health. It's less clear how we can act on that data. you know, so collecting the data is key, and it's really been, you know, the focus of USCDI and Gravity. But, you know, we're hearing that patients may be less enthusiastic about sharing, that providers may be less enthusiastic about asking and documenting, you know, until such time that we can A, exchange the data, and B, act on the data. Clearly, the exchange is what's going to come as USCDI is leveraged to support this effort, but the actions are tough. You know, we live in a society full of need, and often with fewer services than would be required to meet those needs. I mean, we've raised some really, you know, philosophical, social questions here, which we're certainly not going to answer. So before we go to public comment,
Stephen, we go to public comment, yeah. I do want to talk about Clem's comment. Clem, I don't think, just as in healthcare as any other industry, there's no single point of gathering information. It can be audio, it can be interview, it can be patient-generated or person-generated. The key is that you have all options available to address all the population. It's not one or the other. So that's just my comment on your patient-generated comment.
Yeah.
So with that, I give it back to you.
Yeah, that makes sense. So again, I wanna circle us back to the key question, which is what can or should our task force do as we are preparing recommendations around version 3 to support the ongoing development of this area. And Mark, I think you put it well, that the Gravity itself is planning for updated submissions during this cycle, which will specifically address needs related to outcomes and consent. And Evelyn, you highlighted those two as kind of the next up in your priority list. And again, I think that's wonderful. I don't specifically know what role, if any, our task force would have in that, you know, besides just sort of sticking a pin in that and saying we think this is great stuff and please keep it moving. But Mark, maybe as you know, are noodling on this both from the Gravity perspective and the task force perspective, perhaps you could come back to us when we meet next week to discuss how we see this potentially fitting in. So with that, we'll ask you to bring up the public comment slide, we will pause to see if any of the various members of the public who've been with us today want to speak up.
Great. Thank you. Operator, can you open the line for public comment, please?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star key. One moment while we pull for comments.
And I know Brett Marquard, you know, has been with us for much of the meeting today. He works closely with HL7 and US Corps in particular. And Brett's been on and off the phone. If Brett, if you're either not in the public comment queue, maybe we can get you the mic after we pull for public comments.
There are no comments at this time.
Great. And Brett, are you on audio? Apparently not. Okay. Well, sorry we missed
Stephen,
that.
Stephen, it says the comment chat says that he's trying.
He's trying. Okay. Well, we'll keep there. Thanks. Sorry, I've got too many chats open at once. It's hard to track them all. Okay. It'd be great if we could get Brett in there. Leslie, you're making a comment here.
I just think as we go through these evolutions of USCDI, it'd be wonderful if within it there were opportunities for people to indicate lessons learned, best practices, so that it can evolve and help others as they implement some of these more challenging collection opportunities.
Great. And Bob Dieterle, who also is very much involved in Gravity in terms of helping to move the IGs forward, just submitted a public chat that one of the most significant changes supported by Gravity implementation guide is the ability to refer patients to community services. And I think that's absolutely key, that this is sort of that action step that I think we'd all like to see based on the data that we're going to be able to collect and exchange. All right. Well, that I don't see any hands. Does anybody think they have their hand up that I can't see? Okay. I see a hand now. Brett Marquardt has a hand up. Does that mean you have audio?
Can you hear me, Dr. Lane?
We can hear you.
Yeah. Hey. All right. I get the final few minutes to share. Thank you. I caught the end of Evelyn's presentation, and it's so fantastic to see the Gravity work. And so just a kind of few updates for folks who, you know, there's so many activities going on, it's impossible to keep track of everything. But at HL7, the current plan is that the U.S. Fire Corps will be validated this winter to be updated to include the new USCDI version 2 data elements and classes. To kind of jumpstart that effort, it looks like Argonaut has been kind of instrumental in kind of guiding some of the definitions of the APIs and the content profiles. And so, you know, Argonaut steering committee met last week and agreed to do kind of a quick start effort to try to start the design and plans to collaborate with Gravity to make sure we have the experience of the SQH for the SQH element. And with the idea that happens kind of August and September, and then it moves into the HL7 formal process, potentially connect-a-thon, depending on how far we get, and on for there. And again, this is all for the version 2.
Well, that's great. It's very exciting to hear that there's a well-defined path to move these forward, you know, now that they've been included in version 2. Brett, does any of that depend on these version 2 being added to the standards version advancement process, or is that an independent process?
Great question. No, at this point, it's independent. I mean, you know, we see the value of the elements, and I think, you know, hopefully they will be in the standards version advancement process, but, you know, we plan to proceed either way.
Great. Well, we are at the top of the hour. I really want to thank everyone for your participation, and we look forward to meeting again next week. Next week, we are going to pick up our work on the prior recommendations that the task force has brought forward, going back to the Google Doc that we've been working on. So I invite all of you to go back and refresh your memory about that and add any comments, especially you, Mark, as we think about how to So continue to support SDOH going forward. We are scheduled to meet the 3rd of August, take a week off for HIMSS, meet the 17th of August. There's some other industry meetings on the 24th, so we haven't currently planned to meet that day, and then meeting on the final plan on the 31st of August, hopefully to prepare our final recommendations for presentation to the HITAC on the 9th of September. So that's our plan. Again, thank you all for your continuing participation and helping to move this forward.
Thank you.
Great work, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much.